Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by you guys. You guys are right here in my living room. I'm getting ready for Friendsgiving. It's a little crowded in here, seeing as tens of thousands of people tune in to listen to the show every day. And I'm supposed to be getting ready for hosting this thing. But you know what? You're all more than welcome in this 10 by 10 studio that I have made for myself. Today's show is going to be, as with every Monday show, a mailbag episode. You guys have sent in all of your questions. There are a ton to get to. The Lakers are coming off of a really fun weekend. They swept their back-to-back in Oklahoma City and Memphis. Both of those games I was a little nervous about. I do still think they're heading towards one of those annoying losses to a lesser team. But for right now, let's just continue enjoying this. With all that said, let's dive right in. First question here comes from I Love Shaq / F Kobe. Hey, Anthony, Pete, love the show and side with Pete on the pizza toppings debacle. You're wrong. Wet fruits don't belong on pizza. You're wrong twice. Anyways, I have a couple questions for you guys. Where do you see the Lakers organization moving forward after LeBron retires? And what is your favorite video game? Let's start. I'll just really quickly answer the second part of that. I'm a huge Assassin's Creed fan. The latest God of War was also really, really good. Red Dead Redemption 2 and obviously 1. That's probably the best combination of video games I have ever played. I'm waiting for a sports game to kind of take the leap. I think the Madden franchise and the NBA 2K franchise and even FIFA to a lesser extent, they've actually made progress over the years. But Madden and 2K have just kind of been going through the motions and adding to the cutscenes, but not really enhancing the gameplay all that much. I would like to see either or both of those games kind of take a step forward with what they offer in terms of actual gameplay. The first question, though, is a fascinating one regarding LeBron and the organization, and it was actually the top question that I had facing the Cleveland Cavaliers when he was getting ready to leave there was, did they learn enough in the time that he was back there to be able to continue to grow moving forward? And it's debatable. They have made strides, and it's a fun young core that they have over there kind of brewing, but, you know, they still have major questions facing them. The Lakers, I think the biggest thing to come out of LeBron's tenure in LA was that the Lakers kind of regained their identity from a team-building perspective. If the Lakers could rebuild to the draft and make themselves more sustainable moving forward, then great. Awesome. That'd be fantastic. I would be 100% on board with that identity. But what we learned over that time while they were trying to rebuild through youth and through the draft is that they didn't quite understand how to develop youth. There are two very different conversations going on that are kind of being intermingled into one conversation regarding the Lakers, specifically with Brandon Ingram, is that I think a lot of Laker fans are mixing up identifying the Lakers' ability to identify really good players in the draft and then taking the next step and developing said young players. So if you look at the players that the Lakers have drafted over the years, all of them are legitimate NBA players, right? For the most part. Anthony Brown is out there somewhere. But if you look at the players that the Lakers have drafted over the years, you go back to Jordan Clarkson, Larry Nance Jr., Julius Randle, D'Angelo Russell, Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, Kyle Kuzma, Ivica Zubac, on down the line. Even Mo Wagner is playing really well. Thomas Bryant is a legitimate starting center in the NBA. So they are very good at identifying talent. It's just a matter of staying patient enough to see those guys. All of the guys that I listed, pretty much, other than Kuzma, are not with the organization right now. So, A, they need to be patient enough to actually watch those guys develop. And B, a lot of those guys have taken strides after leaving the organization or comparatively larger strides. I said that like I was from Australia. But they have all taken comparatively larger strides after leaving the organization compared to where they were when they were in the Lakers organization. And, you know, hiring Phil Handy after all of the young core kind of goes away, well, it's kind of a bummer because I would have liked to seen what he could have done for a lot of the guys that the Lakers drafted. All that said, though, to get back to the question at hand, I would venture to say that the Lakers re-identifying or coming to terms with the organization that they are and understanding, all right, you actually do have to build from the top down, not the bottom up. That's something that I don't think can be exaggerated in terms of its importance. The Lakers are an organization that has to find a superstar and then build around the superstar. They are probably not the type of organization that is going to draft a superstar, draft role players to fit around the superstar, and then watch that team grow over the years. You look at, and this isn't any new information. You look at the Showtime Lakers. Yes, they drafted Magic Johnson, and they eventually drafted James Worthy, and they eventually traded Norm Nixon for Byron Scott, right, who was essentially a draft pick. You kind of look at Michael Cooper and other, but those guys that they drafted, well, they all kind of circled around Kareem, who arrived there first. Kareem and Magic were an incredible tandem, and then they found pieces around those guys, right, top down. You look at the Kobe Shaq years, or even right before the Kobe Shaq years, they were trying to build with a young core, and it was a fun young core. You had Nick Van Exel, you had Anthony Peeler, Eddie Jones, Eldon Campbell, Vlade Divac. Like they had a fun young core, but not quite the kind of ceiling that is expected of the Lakers. Then they acquire Shaq, they draft Kobe, and then they build the team around those guys. Again, top to bottom. Same thing when the Lakers had Kobe, right? They had Kobe. They drafted Bynum. He took longer, obviously, than Kobe wanted to develop. But eventually he got there. They traded for Powell and then built around Kobe and Powell, top to bottom. And I think right now what they're doing is they have LeBron. After trying to build through the draft, they now have they acquired LeBron. They traded everything that they drafted and even some of their future assets for Anthony Davis, build a team around those guys, and are now a legitimate title contender, if not title favorite, top to bottom. And that's kind of what the Lakers, even while LeBron, there's value obviously in LeBron and Clutch having their operating like puppeteers across the NBA, like there's value in that. But I think what is more valuable is the Lakers identifying, coming to terms, understanding what it is that made them special in the first place, where Lakers exceptionalism is derived from. It's from finding superstars, building around those superstars, and winning while you have the window of having those superstars. And I think that sets them up pretty well moving forward. Let's take a quick second here, and when we come back, I'm going to keep on answering your questions. Hopefully more than one per segment. All right, next question here comes from Kittle Finger. Hey, Anthony, love the show. Thank you. So currently the Lakers are ranked 23rd in pace, and this is the slowest LeBron-led team since 2015/16. I would like to see them push the pace a little bit more, especially in minutes with AD and without LeBron, since AD feasts in semi-transition opportunities. My question is, do you think their current pace is a problem? Do you think it will increase or decrease as the season goes along, and what would the optimal pace for this team look like? I think that the pace is probably going to, it might slightly increase, but I think this is about how fast they're going to operate. This team is actually very good in the half court when LeBron isn't insistent upon taking step back three pointers in the final minutes of games. I think what you're probably going to see is that the Lakers are not going to run very much. And we kind of saw this coming heading into the year. But they aren't going to run very much. And then when they do run, they are going to be highly efficient in those opportunities. I agree. I would like to see them run a little bit more. I just don't necessarily see it the other way to answer this question is, it depends on what kind of acquisitions are made over the course of the season. If the Lakers acquire a point guard who is not Rajon Rondo that LeBron James trusts, I think the pace might actually increase because those guys are very good at understanding what kind of pace the team needs to run at. If they don't, though, I think their pace is probably going to remain right where it is. And I think it's good and bad. It's good from the standpoint of it gets you ready for the playoffs when everything slows down. And the better that the Lakers figure out half-court situations right now, the better situated they are going to be as they get ready for the postseason. The bad side of that coin, though, is that it really limits the number of easy baskets that the Lakers get. And, you know, most people think, well, if you're running up and down, that takes a toll on players because they are doing a lot of running. And I would say, no, I actually think it's the opposite of that. And we actually talked about this. Pete and I talked about this on a previous show, that most of the wear and tear occurs in the half court because you have guys in a more cramped up space. So I would like to see the Lakers run a little bit more. I just don't quite see it as they're currently constituted because LeBron has the ball so often. And he just, I mean, you see it when he gets the ball, even when he gets a rebound, he lets everybody run up ahead of him, the entire defense run up ahead of him. And he's more interested in walking the ball up the court, getting into the half court set, and then operating from there than he is. You know, occasionally he'll throw the occasional hit-ahead pass, but even when he throws the occasional hit-ahead pass, he throws the pass and then just kind of like wanders up the court after he throws it, which doesn't really help your transition opportunity when LeBron is not really involved in that transition. So I would like to see them run more. I just don't quite see it right now. Laker Banner Kirk writes, writes, "Hey Ant, great pod and congrats on being a dad." Thanks. It's been fun. It's been a lot of fun. "I'm an avid listener and Twitter banter contributor when I have time. Question for the bag. Me and my friends noticed roster similarities between this LeBron and AD team versus the 2010 Kobe Powell team. Both teams can go Twin Towers and seamlessly roll out a skilled smaller lineup with AD and Kuz, like when we used to roll out Powell Lamar in the front court. So who wins in a 7-game series between these two teams? Also a huge favor for Pete. Pete, my dude, I'm a big fan of your content. Can I get an unblock on Twitter?" He isn't here, but I'll try to pass along the word. So the similarities between this team and that Laker team, there are some. It's a little different in that a lot of the Lakers' creativity back then came from Kobe at the shooting guard spot, whereas this team has almost no creativity out of the shooting guard spot. You have Danny Green, who needs things created for him. KCP, same kind of thing. It's a slightly different point of attack, but it is, you know, you do have, you know, Kobe was a wing at that time. So you do have the wing big combination and then the muscle. I think Bynum was probably better at that stage of his career than both JaVale or Dwight are at their stages of their careers. But yeah, there are some similarities. Who wins in a 7-game series? I think that Kobe Powell team probably beats this team in a 7-game series, but it goes 7. And that would be a really fun matchup between the two teams. I would watch the hell out of that series. Let's go a couple more questions here. Let Shannon Dunk writes, "Hey guys, back again with another question. Not sure if my continuously submitting a 5-star review helps, but if it doesn't, let me know and I'll make a new account to submit questions each time. I don't think you have to do that. I appreciate it, though. Obviously, Rondo and Kuzma are very much a negative on the defensive end, but given they both come off the bench, they play a lot together. Do you think there's a way around this since they're often on the court together coming off the bench? Also, congrats, Pete, on the new job at The Athletic. Maybe you can get Anthony a job there, too. They can't afford me. I'm kidding. Yeah, Athletic, if you're listening. That'd be fun. All right. Regarding the actual question, I don't think it's a coincidence that the Lakers' defensive rating has been kind of sliding ever since Rondo and Kuzma came back. And by the way, this is something that Pete and I, I predicted and Pete agreed with, is that the Lakers' identity was going to shift at the time before Kuzma and Rondo came back. They made their name on the defensive end and then scored in the half court when they had to. This team is better offensively, and I think what you see going on right now is, A, it's not as good a roster defensively because Kyle Kuzma and Rajon Rondo are both pretty bad on defense, but they have a higher ceiling because they are that much better offensively. I am still dubious of the Rajon Rondo fit on this team. We kind of saw Rondo and LeBron operate a little bit more in the two-man game, and that looked awkward. It's going to take time, granted, but I'm still a little iffy on that guy as a fit. But overall, while the team is worse defensively, they are better offensively and I think have a higher ceiling. Is there a way around the Kuzma-Rondo tandem? Probably not, unless you want to start Kuzma. Which, if you start Kuzma, that means you have both JaVale and Dwight coming off of the bench, and the rotation gets a little tricky there because it's not like those guys can play at the same time. So I think what you really need to have happen is Rondo needs to play fewer minutes, and one of Troy Daniels or Quinn Cook needs to not be the disasters that they've kind of been so far this year. And Kuzma can you know, play more minutes with either LeBron or Anthony Davis or Dwight Howard. So, yeah, I think overall I wouldn't call it a concern. The Lakers are winning is the thing. Like, I would be a lot more nervous about this if the Lakers weren't winning. Now, they're winning kind of ugly, but they're winning nonetheless. And I think to a certain extent, while you can look for fixes here and there, you also have to be cognizant of the way that the locker room works. And look, Rondo was going to play. While he's on the roster, he's going to play. So it's just a matter of how can you optimize Rondo when he's out there on the court? And how can you optimize Kuzma when he's out there on the court? And the answer to that is, you need to do whatever you can to make the offense look more as natural as possible for those guys, because it's not like they're ever going to improve the team defensively. Let's take another quick second here. When we come back, I'm going to keep on answering your questions. All right, the next question here comes from LA1056. Good show. Didn't agree with you saying AD wasn't having an impact in the Atlanta game. I get they didn't need him and could have rested him, but his defensive impact was obvious and it wasn't like he put up a donut in the scoring column. Alternatively, do you think AD is/will be the best defensive player in the league? Who does he remind you of on that end? I know the offense will turn around eventually. All right, so I was being a little facetious about Anthony Davis against Atlanta. He's always going to have an impact out there. He floated a little bit, especially offensively, but overall, yeah, he's a special defender who every time he's on the court, the Lakers are going to be a better team. I didn't think we needed to clarify that on that, but here we are. Regarding the defender or the player that Anthony Davis reminds me of, man, that's tough. I would probably say Kevin Garnett is the closest because of Davis's ability to affect the defensive end, both on the perimeter and the interior. I will say, though, that And I'm not saying this like Anthony Davis is Kevin Garnett with rim protection. I'm not going to go that far, but he is a little... So Garnett was a better perimeter defender, and Anthony Davis is a better interior defender. That's just the closest comparison I can actually make. The other player that Anthony Davis kind of reminds me of is actually LeBron. That year that LeBron won the MVP... or not the MVP. He should have won the MVP. The year that Derrick Rose won the MVP, LeBron was all over the court. And on that team, you had Chris Bosh, who was an okay defender, but wasn't, you know, the rim protector that obviously Anthony Davis is. So you needed a little bit more rim protection. And when LeBron was kind of running and was at his absolute peak athletically, he was able to change the game at the rim and was also an absolute lockdown defender on the perimeter. I remember poor Derrick Rose, after he won the MVP, they had a series against LeBron in the Miami Heat, and Rose couldn't score, couldn't get by LeBron. And while, again, it's like if you combine kind of LeBron's ability on the perimeter or Kevin Garnett's ability on the perimeter, and then both of their kind of abilities at the rim, you're getting close. You're at probably Anthony Davis's abilities on the defensive end. He's, goodness, I can't believe I'm about to say this. He's one of the best defensive players the league has ever seen. And when I say one of, he is right there amongst the absolute best defensive presences the NBA has ever seen. He's an absolute freak, and he's at the peak of his powers right now. So while everybody likes to focus or pay more attention to what the Lakers do on the offensive end, I'm telling you guys right now, watch Anthony Davis on the defense. Don't watch the ball. But when the Lakers are playing defense, just watch Anthony Davis on the defensive end and just look at the number of plays that he affects off of the ball. And then when he gets switched onto the ball, he gets even better. That's the kind of special player that the Lakers have on the defensive end. And it's kind of a bummer the way that people vote for these things. Like Rudy Gobert and Draymond Green are probably, you know, seen as the league's best defensive players. And that's because they're great on the defensive end, obviously. But they get a little bit more credit for their abilities on defense because of how good they aren't on offense. Anthony Davis is really good on offense and is just as good as those guys, if not better than those guys, on the defensive end. And that's why he's incredible to watch. Dano_Laker writes, "Great job, guys. Question for both of you. Has Dwight been better for the team overall than what we could have expected from Boogie? Pros and cons." Again, it's kind of like I talked about a second ago with Kuzma and Rondo. They made the Lakers, Kuzma especially, makes the Lakers better overall. Not as good defensively, but better overall. I think the Lakers are better right now than they would be. They'd be better offensively, but they are better right now than they would be with... they are better with Dwight than they would have been with DeMarcus Cousins. The thing with Cousins that I don't think... It's kind of a tough point to make because it's very hypothetical, but he hurt his knee. Like, he tore his knee up on a non-contact play in a YMCA game, taking a pretty normal layup. And I just don't think the Lakers would have been in a good place relying on his body to hold up over the course of the season. Whereas you look at Dwight, and he looks pretty damn indestructible. Now, I'm going to knock on wood right now, but he looks incredible physically. And I think Dwight has a better chance of holding up over the course of the season than DeMarcus Cousins would have. And while their skill sets and that stuff is probably more fascinating and more interesting to get into, at the end of the day, availability is the key ability here. And Dwight Howard is probably going to be available over the course of the season to a larger extent than DeMarcus Cousins would have been. Next, Lakers Dynasty writes, "What do you think the Lakers' record will be heading into the new year?" I also asked this question last week, and you read it on the show but didn't give your thoughts. Everyone in Lakers Nation is clamoring for Iguodala to hit the open market, but is it fair to wonder how much he has left in the tank? Iggy looked washed in the finals and didn't look great in the playoffs before that. It's not... I guess I gave my thoughts, but I didn't. Iguodala, it's not necessarily about how washed or unwashed or clean or whatever, however we want to define that word. It's how good is he compared to the other players on the market and compared to the players that the Lakers currently have on their roster. Even while he has lost a step, he would still be the best perimeter defender from the wing spot that the Lakers have, seeing as LeBron isn't interested in playing defense the way that Iguodala would be, right? So that's where Iguodala would have value there. Might there be better players available come the buyout market? Maybe. But in terms of what the Lakers are looking for, Iguodala would kind of complete this team. What do I think the Lakers' record will be heading into the new year? December is tougher, considerably tougher than their schedule to this point. So I'd have to look at it. I don't have it up in front of me. But if the Lakers were right now, they sit at 12 games over 500 or 13 games over 500, whatever the number is. Although, apparently I've been thinking about that wrong, that, you know, if you actually go by the traditional definition of math, they're like 7.5 games above 500. But I think it's just easier to think of. They have 12 more wins than they have losses. So I think they will probably have about 7 more wins than they have losses heading into the new year. The schedule gets tougher, and I do think we're going to start seeing the Lakers kind of go into more of a coasting kind of pace as they figure out, okay, yeah, we are really, really good. We have a nice gap on everybody. Let's just get to the playoffs and get a proper seed for what we need to be able to accomplish and kind of only put out so much energy per game. And what that's probably going to mean is that they're going to have a couple weird losses that they wouldn't normally have. Like if it was a video game, the Lakers will probably, if it was just NBA Live or NBA 2K, and you could scale down fatigue across the roster, I think the Lakers would probably have 15 more wins than they have losses heading into the new year. But because this doesn't work that way, they will probably be closer to, you know, 7 or 8 compared to the 13 that they're at right now. They'd still be really good. They would still be the same team. It would just be a matter of, okay, they're going to lose the occasional game because they played with their food a little too long or something like that. And I think that's going to really bite them when the schedule starts getting tougher. That's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Pete will be back tomorrow. Kind of a weird week with the holiday coming up this week. I'm debating whether or not I will do a Thanksgiving pod. I know a lot of you guys travel, and it doesn't take very much for me to record anyway. So I'll probably just record this week as is normal. I'm going to be out of town, though, for Black Friday. So it just depends on how I'm feeling after Thanksgiving, whether or not we're going to have a show for Black Friday. Either way, though, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.